From beanies to carry bags and from shoes to caps, browse our shop now at tntradio.live. Investigating and reporting on government corruption and overreach, you're listening to Scott Wheeler and Through the Looking Glass on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Hello and welcome to Through the Looking Glass. I'm Scott Wheeler, broadcasting from Washington, D.C. Thank you for joining us. This week has been a very big news week. We're not going to talk about the submarine. That's not really in our purview. But we are going to talk about a couple of other things that are substantially within our investigative zone. One is the testimony of Special Counsel John Durham. The other is the prosecutor, special prosecutor appointed to investigate Hunter Biden and whether or not he had committed crimes and whether or not his father was involved in his business dealings, which are somewhat questionable, to put it mildly. First, let's start out with John Durham. On June 22nd, Special Counsel Durham testified before the House Judiciary Committee regarding the findings of his 300-page report. Durham, of course, was appointed by then Attorney General William Barr, in 2019 to investigate the 2016 FBI investigation into the Trump-Russia collusion origins, known as that investigation was known as Crossfire Hurricane. There were many questions from the very beginning, and in fact, as I pointed out before, in October of 2016, this reporter wrote for Forbes magazine, pointing out many of the discrepancies in that line of belief that somehow Putin wanted Trump to be president, a fallacy that is so ridiculous based on 8 years of Obama and 4 years of Clinton as Secretary of State, would be laughable if it were not so serious. But also the long list of Putin appeasements that occurred under the Obama regime that culminated in 2012 when he whispered to then Prime Minister Medvedev, tell Vlad I'll be more flexible after the election. Talk about collusion. That is evidence of collusion. Yet, unfortunately, Trump's communication team never pointed any of this out. As I told one of his communications people in 2017, if I were you, I'd get the video of Obama saying that to Medvedev, and I would greet every question from the press corps about Trump-Russia collusion with that and say, did you ever investigate that? That looks like collusion to me. And it was, of course, some level of collusion. Anyway, to get into all of this, we've got two experts who can shed light on this to explain what it all means. We are going to speak to Joseph DeGeneva, who is a former United States prosecutor for the District of Columbia, and Victoria Tensing, a former deputy assistant attorney general in the Justice Department during the Reagan administration. They are both partners at the law firm DeGeneva and Tensing. They're list of accomplishments would take too long to list, so we'll bring them in now. Thank you, Mr. DeGeneva and Ms. Tensing. Thank you for joining us on Through the Looking Glass. We have many questions for you.
Be with you, Scott.
Nice to be with you, Scott.
First, let's deal with one thing that has bothered me for a long time, and that is the media, including Fox News, refers to the prosecutor appointed to investigate Hunter Biden as a Trump appointee. And that seems to be one of the many things that the media reports that, while maybe technically true, is substantially false. Was Weiss actually a Republican and a loyal Trump devotee, or was he actually recommended for the post by two prominent Democrats from Delaware?
Scott, the bottom line is Delaware is a small southern state. I know that because I was born and raised there in Wilmington, Delaware. The two senators from Delaware are Democrats, Tom Carper and Chris Coons. They recommended David Weiss for this job, and the only person who ever would have been appointed U.S. attorney had to be a person recommended by the two United States senators. So while he's technically a Trump appointee, he's actually appointed by two Democratic senators. And if anything, he has demonstrated not independence throughout this very, very special investigation, but rather someone who lacks the backbone and the basic strength of character to investigate something like this. We have heard so many stories over the last few days from IRS whistleblowers, FBI people, John Durham, about what Weiss did or didn't do, that it is now incumbent upon him to provide testimony to the House of Representatives, to both the Oversight Committee and the Judiciary Committee. One thing we know for sure, it took him 5 years to investigate a case that should have taken no more than 6 months. So the key question is, Mr. Weiss, why did it take so long? And the answer from the IRS agents is there was delay constantly. And if there was that much delay, and it was being imposed on him by people inside the Justice Department, why didn't he quit?
Or yes, why? A question. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Ms. Tinsey.
Well, I just wanted to add that delay means going past the statute of limitations.
And they lost felony counts because they delayed, and that is inexcusable for a United States attorney. And in fact, all of the available evidence indicates that everybody who was a key decision maker in this case, who was associated with the Justice Department, was incompetent, unprofessional, and unethical, and decided that they were going to give every break to the Biden family.
Let me just tell you, Scott, the important and one of the acts of conduct that was unethical. The assistant U.S. attorney, Leslie Wolf, called the Hunter Biden defense team and told them there could be a search on a storage facility. I've indicted people for a warning of a search. You don't tell the target that you're going to be searching a certain place, because then, of course, everything disappears.
Yeah, what is the point of a warrant and a surprise search if they know in advance the search is coming? This is the kind of thing we've seen. It is one of the many peculiarities, and I'll let me ask you about this. Both Weiss and John Durham told Congress, Weiss in a letter to Congress and Durham in his testimony, that Merrick Garland did not interfere with their investigations. But I know from sources close to the Durham investigation, Garland told Durham over a year ago that he wanted him to wrap it up by May of 2022, last year. If that isn't interference, it's hard to describe what is. And a very reliable source on close to the investigation. Why would Durham, Weiss can kind of be figured, you know, but why would Durham tell Congress that the Attorney General did not interfere with his investigation?
It's pretty obvious that nobody, I can't figure out who interfered with Durham's investigation, because it didn't produce much. What's appalling to me was everything he wrote in his report could have been reported in 2020, before the 2020 election. He didn't need 4 years to do this. This was ridiculous. I'm sure he's an earnest man. He appears to me to be a bit puritanical. He's obviously an institutionalist. He spent 40 years as a federal prosecutor. Perhaps he spent too much time as a federal prosecutor and fell in love with all the FBI agents and the assistant U.S. attorneys. The truth is, he didn't indict James Comey. He didn't indict McCabe and Strzok. All of those people should have been charged with violating the civil rights of Donald Trump. I'm very unimpressed with Durham's performance, although I think he's probably a very decent guy.
Even if he wasn't going to charge them, individuals, he should have called them in before the grand jury. And if they refuse to testify, give them immunity. And then they have to testify. And if they lied, then the statute of limitations gets renewed on all the conduct that they had. What's your Republican administration in 2 years, God, inshallah, could address?
It is very peculiar that he did not issue subpoenas for some of the key, Strzok being one of the key witnesses, and Comey and McCabe. Not issuing the subpoenas, not at least attempting to force them, compel their testimony, is even stranger. But I think your assessment of Durham seems consistent with my 25 years in Washington investigating these kinds of things, going all the way back to the Clinton years and the tech transfers to China, that these career prosecutors, they've been working with these guys for years. Some of them have personal relationships with FBI, with these FBI agents and managers, and it's hard for them to see that they could possibly be involved in corruption and cover up. But to those of us who look at this from the outside, we see it very clearly. There's no explanation for some of this behavior.
Not about that. I mean, all you have to do is look at Comey and Strzok and Page. Clearly, their conduct was illegal and criminal, and there's just no reason for Durham not to pursue them criminally, except out of an abundance of respect for the institution and not wanting to harm it any further. The problem with that is that when people are seeking accountability, when the public wants accountability, if you don't give it to them, then all you do is make the problem worse in terms of people's credibility and in terms of the public's trust. By not charging those people, he missed the golden opportunity. Certainly by not immunizing them and bringing them in for compelled testimony, he created the situation where it looked like he didn't want to talk to them, which to me is inexplicable.
Yeah, how could he not want to? They, in one case, in the case that he brought against the Clinton attorney, Democrat attorney Michael Sussman in Washington, D.C., we saw that in what seemed to be a very fairly obvious case of lying to the FBI, it was over the bank, foreign bank transfers that Sussman took to the FBI and claimed that he wasn't representing a client when in fact he obviously was. Sussman was acquitted by a D.C. jury. And Mr. Geneva, you were the U.S. prosecutor in Washington, D.C. in the 1980s. Is this evidence that the Democrat Party has been poisoning jury pools with their very public attacks on every investigation into their own wrongdoing? How can we explain this? Obvious. I think one of the jurors actually said, "Well, we don't think lying to the FBI is the most important problem our country faces." How can this happen?
I don't think there's any doubt that given the Democratic Party stronghold in the District of Columbia, 98% of the district is Republican.
Mm-hmm. Democrat.
Excuse me, Democrat. 98% is Democrat. All the jury pools are Democrat. It's very difficult for a Republican or a conservative to get a fair trial. And certainly, if you're charging somebody like Sussman for lying on behalf of the Democratic Party, it's pretty obvious that the jurors are not going to be sympathetic to the prosecution, which is why if you're going to bring the Sussman case, fine, you're going to lose it, you're going to lose it. You got to charge Comey and the rest. Even if the jury in the District of Columbia is going to give Comey and Strzok and Page a pass, then let the public know that's what the jury pool in the District of Columbia is like.
And here's the Democrat philosophy, and you've seen it ever since Joe Biden took over. The process is the punishment. Look what they did to Peter Navarro, putting him in handcuffs at National Airport and throwing him into a jail cell for a misdemeanor. They have subpoenaed a whole bunch of us who were lawyers. They'd search warrant. They took my cell phone with a search warrant because I had evidence of Joe Biden and Hunter Biden corruption in Ukraine, and that's what they wanted. So this is what they're doing to people. The process is a punishment. Yeah, pay for a search warrant and all of the legal fees that go with it, because we're going to put you through the process. And Republicans don't do that. They say, oh, well, we should be fair.
We are speaking with two former prosecutors for the United States Justice Department, Joseph DeGeneva and Victoria Tensing. We're going to take a short time out. When we come back, we'll talk a little more about what seems to be corruption in the Department of Justice and how this has occurred over the years. And we'll get the opinions of Mr. DeGeneva and Ms. Tensing right after this short timeout.
TNT Radio's State of the Nation.
Decisive actions on AI coming in the next few weeks, the White House says. President Biden delivering a speech on AI in California just yesterday. Say they're going to take decisive actions. White House Chief of Staff is overseeing process, blah, blah, blah. You know what's interesting about this one, though, Lynn? Not a single mention, hardly, about Kamala Harris until the very last paragraph. It's like they try to give the reader this whole, like, oh, the administration's looking into the thing here, the AI issue, finally, and then at the very bottom, White House tapped Vice President Kamala Harris to act as its AI czar earlier this year, reporting in a bid to help refurbish her image. However, guidance for both her and Biden's schedule released on Monday evening suggests she will not be on hand for these meetings or speeches. So it just goes to show that, like, giving ceremonial titles out, AI czar, to someone like her that has no idea what is going on. Probably can't even spell AI, even though it's only two letters.
State of the Nation on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Affordable housing, we can build that. Sustainable housing, we can build that. At MIT Modular, we understand the importance of housing for all and the importance of design, cost, and functionality. Our goal is to meet the needs of our growing population by converting shipping containers to livable units. If you're like-minded and in a position to invest in something meaningful and life-changing, we want to hear from you. We are a team of professional architects, engineers, and financial and tax experts dedicated to offering unique solutions that provide a brighter future. Our Opportunity Zone Fund offers investors both real estate and operating business diversification, 5-year tax deferral on capital gains, annual tax benefits, and ultimately tax-free appreciation potential. There are Opportunity Zones all over America. If you're interested in learning more about our services, need affordable housing, or want to participate in creating a new vision for tomorrow, give us a call in the U.S. on 385-985-5702. Or read more at mitmodular.com. MIT Modular. We can build that.
You're listening to Scott Wheeler and Through the Looking Glass on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Just as the man said, I'm Scott Wheeler. You're listening to Through the Looking Glass on TNT Radio. Right now, we are joined by two former United States Justice Department prosecutors, Joseph DeGeneva and Victoria Tensing. They're in the law partnership of DeGeneva and Tensing as of now. They are answering questions for us about the what appears to be a corrupt cancer eating away at the Department of Justice in the United States. And in Durham's testimony on Wednesday, he seemed to be defending the FBI and the Department of Justice amidst a lot of Republicans' attacks and wanting even at times to defund the FBI. In the two of you's estimation, is the FBI irredeemable? Can it be fixed? And how about the Justice Department? How serious is this evidence of corruption at both?
It can be fixed, but only at the top. Bill Barr at least claimed that he was trying to do it, but he didn't have the personality to go in and really clean house. He too is a lot like Durham, much more of an institutionalist. I can tell you from being Deputy Assistant AG that most of the career people there are liberals, they're Democrats, because Republicans tend to leave and go into private practice. The Democrats stay. They like to be a part of government. But I have never seen the Justice Department until this past 2 years go after people because of their political party. It was always, if the Democrats came in, they would go more to antitrust cases. The Republicans come in, they start looking at pornography. You know, it was sort of, it was really issue oriented. But this is, and I've just never seen it in the history.
I don't think there's any doubt that the Department of Justice began to go south during the tenure of Eric Holder during the Obama administration, when he was, as he described himself, Eric Holder, the president's wingman. That was an unseemly description of the Attorney General of the United States, but one that he and the president felt very comfortable with. I think what happened after that, when Comey gave his corrupt news conference in July of 2016, basically defending Hillary Clinton and usurping the functions of the Attorney General, that was the final nail in the coffin. And from there on in, the department and the FBI were beyond repair. And Christopher Wray has been a useless FBI director. He has no leadership qualities. He's incompetent. He has no charisma. He doesn't care. He cares about his next job. Christopher Wray has to be replaced. Obviously, an attorney general has to be installed of the utmost integrity, honesty, and legal skills. We need a Republican president. We need a whole new team. And then there's going to have to be a complete reorganization of the Department of Justice. That's going to take some time. It's going to take 2 terms. Bill Barr was not attorney general long enough to do what needed to be done in the Department of Justice. But there's just no doubt that Christopher Wray is the most important cog in this wheel. He has to be removed along with all of his senior lieutenants.
But you have to have people at the top of both of those institutions that have killer instincts. You just can't have people that say, oh, that wouldn't look good. As by the way, Trump's people around him said when we were saying to the White House, you got to get rid of Comey day one. And the New Yorkers around him said, oh, that wouldn't look good. Well, how did it look when he had to get rid of him 4 months later?
Well, he did. He failed. I wrote in defense of Trump many times over the years and in utter frustration that they never adopted any of those things that could have helped him. But one of the things he should have stressed was that if Hillary Clinton had won the election, Comey wouldn't have lasted that long. She blames him for her loss, and she certainly would have given him the axe right away. But
it was a moment when both Republicans and Democrats were upset with Comey. It would have been ideal on day one of his administration.
But other than the two of you, is there anybody out there that you would trust to be the attorney general and actually appoint a committee to investigate and rectify these things, the kind of cancerous corruption that's taken over the Department of Justice and seemingly the FBI? Is there anybody would recommend for that job?
Here's the thing, you don't need a committee. You have to go in and start changing things right away. Anybody who knows anything about the department knows who the players are and where the problems are. You need a very, very senior person, either a very strong attorney general of one of the states, and there are very few of those. They tend to be overly political and not as good as they should be. A former lawyer, somebody like Joe Lieberman would be great because he was an attorney general in his state. He was a United States senator. He's relatively moderate, but he's also a smart guy, and he's honest and integrity. There are very, very few people. Bill Barr was one of them. Barr was one of the great guys. Barr was recommended by Victoria and me to President Trump to be attorney general because he had all the skills. He just wasn't there long enough. And, of course, when he and Trump had their falling out at the end of the Trump administration, when Trump was contending that he hadn't lost the election, nothing was going to be pretty after that. And, of course, Bill has become a very, very severe critic of the president about the post-election activities and all that. But the truth is they're going to have to be very serious about the selection process, and they need to start thinking about it now. All of these candidates for the president need to start thinking about the person that they would name to be attorney general. But it's got to be someone very strong, very senior. It cannot be a young person. It's got to be someone with a lot of legal skills. And most importantly, I just don't think it can be a judge. Judges are generally very poor at administration. and they don't understand the function of prosecution. Best example of that is Ken Starr, God rest his soul. He was a horrible special prosecutor because he didn't know how to pull the trigger.
You know, that's a very good point. At that time, he was the Democrats demonized him, of course, but he was very weak, including when he had a search warrant. I think it was under him. It was either under him or Fisk, but I think it was Starr early on. He had a search warrant because the Clintons were being uncooperative. A D.C. judge awarded a search warrant for the White House, and instead of going in and doing the search, they allowed Lisa Caputo, the Clinton's attorney, to conduct the search for him. And it was just mind-boggling at the time to see that happen.
I have another better Ken Starr story. Remember when Ken Starr, the blue dress and the stain on the blue dress? And Ken told Clinton about it before his testimony. And I saw Ken a few days after that, and I said, why did you tell him? I mean, we're street fighters, Joe and I. And he said, Victoria, I couldn't do that to the president of the United States. That's no killer instinct.
Well, it goes directly to what you referred to earlier, the institutionalist nature of so many people, even including William Barr, who I have a lot of respect for. They do believe that by kicking over the institutions, you do more damage in the long run to the country and to the United States. And they're way over concerned about the reputation. I was told by a U.S. congressman, a Republican congressman, during the Clinton investigation, I was on the vanguard of that. I went to China before anybody else noticed the tech transfers and began reporting on it and the illegal donations coming into the Clinton campaign and the DNC in the mid-1990s. And I was discussing it in private with a Republican congressman, and I said, why don't you bring this out? Why don't you impeach him over this? And he said it would wreck the economy, it would destroy the country, and it would destroy our reputations around the world. It would make the United States look weak and corrupt. And I said, "Would you are aware that these countries who have bribed the Clintons know already that we're corrupt? Wouldn't it be better to unearth this and force the United States to face it down and make sure that justice is meted out in this situation?" That was a very frequent response from Republicans at that time, and so the institutionalists
and they still feel that way. Many of them, the Democrats, never feel that way because they're basically thugs. But the bottom line is this: you cannot continue to preserve institutions that are rotten. Letting things continue that are hopelessly compromised is not a good answer. You are destroying those institutions, and you are further destroying public trust. They must be cleaned up. The FBI and the Department of Justice must be cleaned up. That is exactly why a Republican has to be elected president. A Democrat cannot continue in office. Otherwise, the Department of Justice will be lost forever. Right now, under Merrick Garland, this is the worst Justice Department in history. Yesterday, he had the unmitigated gall to say that people were criticizing the department and the FBI. And by doing that, they were criticizing democracy. What nonsense. How presumptuous, how outrageous. He's done more damage to law enforcement and the rule of law than any attorney general in the 20th and 21st century.
Yeah, I when I saw that quote, Hillary Clinton came to mind from 2004 when she said, "How dare you say that this administration cannot be criticized?" And it referring to the Bush administration. And it does seem, you talk about corrupt institutions. I've said more than once on this broadcast that the Democrat Party is the most corrupt institution in the history of the country. And yet Republicans refused to talk about this. And I've been saying it for 10, 12 years now. Why don't corruption at the federal level is among the issues that ranks highest with voters? It has like a 74% to 76% concern rate with voters. It's number 4 or 5 on their list of concerns. And yet Republicans have not pointed this out and made the argument and forced the Democrat Party to defend themselves. And we continue to see the country lose as a result of this. Is there any sign or any Republicans that are going to step up here and start doing this?
Here's been the attitude on the part of the Republicans. Well, we don't want to be like the Democrats. We're not going to do tit for tat. And yet my favorite story to oppose that position is the independent counsel law. You remember it. If you sneezed, you could be the subject of an independent counsel investigation. And it was just great while the Reagan people were under attack. But then Clinton got in office and Janet Reno used the independent counsel law against Democrats. And guess what? All of a sudden, it wasn't such a great idea and they let it lapse. Not until Republicans are willing to go tit for tat will this stop.
We also have had a very bad situation in the United States Senate where we have had a group of senators on the Republican side who've been feckless, ineffective, except for very, very few. Ron Johnson from Wisconsin has been superb. Chuck Grassley from Iowa has been fantastic.
Name the bad ones.
And Hawley has been very good.
Well, the bad ones, Mitt Romney,
and
John Cornyn.
We've had a lot of very bad Republican senators who have not done a very good job and have compromised too much and not been strong enough. And when you have that type of weakness in the other body, then it's very difficult. We are very, very lucky to have the House of Representatives being run the way it's being run right now. If it weren't for that, this administration would be out of control. I mean, they're out of control now, but can you imagine how bad it would be if the House was not doing what it's doing now with Jordan and Comer and the House Ways and Means Committee? I mean, they are the ones that are single-handedly, without any assistance whatsoever from the Republicans in the Senate, keeping this administration at bay.
It is interesting to see that with that very tight majority, they have been able to wield a lot more power and influence, which is encouraging because they are using it in the right way versus the way that Democrats typically use power. We have now, we talk about, I pointed this out many times too, that the Democrats have challenged every election won by a Republican, every national election won by a Republican since 1980 through one means or another, either with the Gary Sick nonsense in the 80s about the Ayatollah and Reagan conspiring all the way through Trump. They've questioned every single one. And in the case of the Trump investigation, the House, I think there's plenty of evidence to suggest the House was lost in 2018 because of unbelievable effectiveness of the Democrat Party propaganda and having the media pretend to believe it. And so you had election interference then. Clearly 2020, there was, I object to the way Trump has defended himself. Instead of citing evidence that's been plowed up by investigative reporters such as myself and many others, instead of citing the evidence, he just says, oh, the election was rigged. And instead of pointing out that you could claim that the 2020 election was unfair on the basis of 4 years of repeating a lie that everybody in Washington knew was a lie. Nobody believed the Russia collusion nonsense. Russia has been colluding with the Democrat Party for 80 years, and all of a sudden and nobody cared then. Nobody cared in 84. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Ryan believed it. Paul Ryan believed it.
I think it's the willful suspension of thinking to believe it, because the Obama 8 years of Obama and 4 years of Clinton as Secretary of State were remarkable in their genuflecting to Putin and Russia. Absolutely remarkable. I mean, the list decontrolling sensitive anti-missile technology to Russia, Obama did this, and many other things. The 10 Russian agents the FBI rounded up in 2010, they returned them within 2 weeks to Moscow. We didn't even get a chance to interrogate them, and nobody considered that collusion. and Republicans barely lifted a finger to say anything about it. And so they might have pretended to believe it. It's hard to imagine anybody with a IQ over 85 could have accepted it, though. I'm sorry, go ahead. Please continue with your thought on that.
Well, Paul Ryan was so hated Trump that he didn't care whether it was true or not. He was going to get in the way of the, he would not allow subpoenas to be issued by the committees to get into various things like Benghazi. He and Trey Gowdy single-handedly destroyed the ability to get to a full accounting of what went on in Benghazi. And it's really a despicable period in history. And Paul Ryan is right where he deserves to be. I mean, he's right at home at the Fox Corporation on the board as they commit hari-kari.
Just as Ailes predicted, Roger Ailes, the former CEO, predicted they would after his demise. We're going to take a short time out. We'll come back with Joseph DeGeneva and Victoria Tensing, who are former U.S. prosecutors. And we'll have more with after this. We'll be right back.
Give me a minute with TNT Radio's Steve Malzberg.
Immigration brings with it a whole set of problems that the left dare not discuss. One of the byproducts of having an overflow of migrants, both legal and illegal in America, is that our public schools are being overrun by their kids. The Center for Immigration Studies has done an analysis of recent information from the Census Bureau, and the results are frightening. The report, Mapping the Impact of Immigration on Public Schools. Among the findings, in 2021, 29% of public school students from immigrant households were from households headed by an illegal immigrant, and that doesn't take into account the recent border crisis. The 11 million public school students in 2021 from immigrant-headed households, legal and illegal, accounted for nearly one out of four students in our public schools. This is double the 11% in 1990 and more than triple the 7% in 1980. Immigration has added significantly to the population of students who speak a foreign language at home. Folks, our kids already can't read or do math up to grade level, and the issues just mentioned are bound to make things a whole lot worse. Thanks for giving me a minute. I'm Steve Malzberg for TNT Radio.
When the forgotten poor are in need of healing, they wait for a ship unlike any other. Mercy Ships, a floating hospital staffed by volunteers, heroes of mercy who donate their time to save lives.
Every human has the right to have a place at the table of the human race.
If you could just see the smiles that you get when lives have been changed, then it would make it all worth it.
To learn more about Heroes of Mercy, go to mercyships.org.
From national security to global corruption, you're with Scott Wheeler and Through the Looking Glass on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Welcome back to Through the Looking Glass on TNT Radio. I'm Scott Wheeler, broadcasting from Washington, D.C. And joining me is two preeminent U.S. attorneys, former U.S. attorneys, Joseph DeGeneva and Victoria Tensing. I should say, the two of you, for decades, my decades in Washington, D.C., I've always noticed that you two were more precise, more accurate in defining what we were seeing, going all the way back to the Starr investigation. You guys have been really the most clear-minded about all of this and this corruption that has led us to this point where we are now, where we have a Justice Department that most people don't trust and suspect of being highly political, and I think that's putting it mildly. So I want to thank you for actually taking these courageous positions. As we know, it is very painful to do it because you know you're going to pay a price when you say something that is unpopular and is against the establishment, and by the establishment I mean mostly Democrat Party run Washington. Even when they're not in power, hey, they're still in power.
Scott, neither the Washington Post nor the New York Times has apologized for calling us conspiracy theorists.
we're not waiting for that apology. And we're not, actually, you know, I would have expected it from the New York Times and the Washington Post, but the place we never expected it was Fox News, where we had been appearing on that network for almost 20 years, helping them build customers and viewers and listeners. And then all of a sudden, After we criticized George Soros, we were persona non grata by the president of Fox News, Suzanne
Scott.
Boy, she's a real thug. She's destroying that place. She's the one responsible for all this pride stuff that's going on inside their stuff. And here's what's really fascinating about them. They have never once apologized to anybody for anything. All the people that have helped them build their brand. It's the reason people hate them. It's the reason people hope they fail. And it's the reason they're losing viewers and listeners. People do not trust Fox anymore.
But let me just tell you what Joe's sin was, Scott. At Lou Dobbs' request, he talked about George Soros and said he controls parts of the State Department, which is true. And George Soros wrote, Susie, that's how he addressed it, Susie, dear Susie, Joe DiGenova is an anti-Semite for having sex. Huh.
I mean, really, really
and
absurd.
And Joe's more Jewish.
Really, really absurd stuff. And it's really fascinating how Fox has now turned on Soros. I mean, now they talk about him all the time on all their shows. We can't figure out what happened. Maybe Suzanne Scott isn't in love with George Soros anymore. Maybe they broke up.
I think maybe the economics of not talking about him racked up enough concern among the Murdochs that is something like that. But I agree with you. I remember I was back in 08, 09, I was preparing to produce a documentary on called Citizen Soros about his influence, outsized influence. And there had already been a New York Times writer who wrote a book in 2004 about he was actually taking the Matthew Bai, he was actually taking a pro-Democrat position on it, praising Soros, essentially showing what a wizard he was at how they realized they were going to have to get control of the State Departments, the State Department and the Secretaries of States of the 50 states in order to be able to basically steal elections. They didn't put it that way, but that's what I read into it. And so at 09, many of my Jewish friends said, wait a minute, you're portraying this guy. I said, he is not Jewish. He's a capo. And I got a couple of rabbis to stand up and say, yes, it's true. He is a capo. And he's no friend of Israel, but yet no Republicans were among the few who point this out frequently, that he is no friend of Israel. He's backed a Palestinian supporting organizations that promote terrorism and promote the idea that Israel doesn't have a right to defend itself against these terrorist attacks. So I know exactly what you mean by how the deck seems stacked against people who actually pursue the truth and facts, or what they believe to be true and facts and evidence, even though the cost is much higher than it would be to just go along with what the establishment the establishment line on any of these things are. But I think Fox is weakening. We see it constantly the way people are turning it off. I see it. It's almost like when you watch Bret Baier, for example. He knows what the boss wants, and he's willing to give it to him. I've just really been disappointed in some of these guys for not holding the line and saying, we're going to continue to pursue these investigations and report the news according to what we find, not according to what the Murdoch family wants. The kids are taking over. I think Rupert is less and less involved in Fox News, and I think we'll continue to see the decline, just as you guys have predicted.
That's but where the they are. I mean, they're just at a point. You can't compromise the way they have compromised, and you can't sell out the way they have sold out. And everybody that had, I mean, when you see the people that they have lost in the last year, Dan Bongino, Tucker Carlson, I mean, the list goes on and on and on. And the notion that those people no longer had anything to contribute to the public wheel is just silly. But that's what's happening at Fox, and it's you know, it's Paul Ryan and those people that are doing it.
So they will be ultimately responsible for the demise of the one, at one point, the only legitimate television news source we had. And it's actually permeating all of the Murdoch properties. The Wall Street Journal is becoming, other than the editorial page, is becoming more and more like NBC News than it is Fox News. It is just kind of going down the drain slowly. The editorial pages being the only exception. And then you had like we saw a couple of years ago, where the rest of the paper turned against the editorial page of the Wall Street Journal. And it is the most strange. It's hard for me to understand, decades in the media, to look at this stuff and say, why are there no journalists like Bernard Goldberg, for example, saying, okay, enough's enough. I'm a Democrat, but at the same time, I'm not going to be a propagandist. We are not seeing anybody come out like that anymore. And it just is, that's true. Discouraging.
It's true. Journalism is dead as we know it. I mean, one of the few bright lights is Newsmax, which is the new cable channel established by Chris Ruddy, the chief executive officer and founder of Newsmax. They do a very good job. They're trying very hard. All Fox has left, by the way, is Greg Gutfeld at night. I mean, that's their biggest show, is Greg Gutfeld, their nighttime comedy hour. And that's really amazing for the way that Fox started out. But God only knows how long he's going to last, because they're pretty critical of all the things that the Fox News people like to stay away from.
Yep, my old friend Ruddy has done great work with Newsmax, and I saw they just brought in my friend Chris Plant to do a 9 o'clock show over there, and I think that was a very smart move too. They are gaining traction while Fox is declining. It'll be interesting to see if they're able to attract the investment necessary to get to the next level and expand.
Exactly. It's going to take a lift, a financial lift. And I think they can do it. If anybody can do it, it's Chris Ruddy. He started out as a website and now he's a network.
Yes, he's done some amazing things. I'll say that. I've been always impressed with him. We started out as Cub reporters. We used to call it the Killing Fields of Arkansas when we were investigating Whitewater back in the mid 90s, and we became friends then. And it was actually, I think, the London Telegraph bureau chief Ambrose Evans Pritchard, who was part of our small group, we used to call it the Killing Fields. But there was just a handful of us. The Wall Street Journal in those days actually covered Clinton corruption, rest of the media, even though they were better in those days than they are today, they still failed miserably to actually hold Clinton accountable for anything, including decontrolling strategic weapons technology to communist China while he was receiving illegal donations from China. But that is, of course, another story we've talked about on this broadcast in the past. Regarding Durham, the report, it falls short, of course, of actually holding anyone accountable. What has to be done? Can you name a person that you think could take over the Justice Department and fix these things? And earlier when I referenced a committee, I mean investigative committees that actually go in, that are set up to look at very specific things, like the Peter Strzok and Lisa Page, that kind of thing. Look at unearth these very specific things and produce reports, and when possible, criminal charges against people who failed to do their duty at the FBI and the Justice Department. Is there anybody that you could see taking over that could do that?
You being Attorney General.
Yes. Yes, an attorney general.
I mean, if you're going to bring charges, you got to be the attorney general. I mean, I think somebody strong, like, I mean, even looking at a Ted Cruz or a Jim Jordan, people who know how evil it is over there might get in. It, see, to me, it's just not somebody who is a manager, but it is somebody who really understands and appreciates how bad the Justice Department is. And so therefore, and that's what Bill Barr lacked. He thought he could just make it all, you know, kind of being good guy, it would work, and it never did.
See, I think that one of the most important things, it has to be someone who's been there, who understands the institution and knows where its flaws are and its weaknesses and where the bodies are buried. Somebody can't come in from the outside and do that. They're just not going to have a sense. And they have to bring in with them people who have been in the department before. And that may be people, by the way, who are at the end of their careers in law, in big law firms or small law firms. People who've been in the department many, many years ago and who have a loyalty to the department but are not loyal to people in the department. And because this is a people problem. This is, the bricks and mortar of the Department of Justice do not have a position on cases. It's the people in the department who are 99% Democrat. You'll look at the records on where they give their money in presidential election. It's almost entirely Democratic. And the issue is, who can take the department by the neck and wring it and take control of it and force change? And that means shifting people around, reorganizing people out of jobs, bringing in good people from all over the country to take these jobs, and bringing in senior people who have been in the department before. And by the way, I'm not trying to be a smart aleck, but it's got to be somebody like me or Victoria, who understand the wielding of power, who understand the institution, and who know where the bodies are buried. The truth is, there are not a lot of people like that around. And it's going to take whoever the next Republican president is, God willing it is in 2025 when they're sworn in, better be ready now. Better start thinking about this. This is the single most serious problem, along with the degradation of the Department of Defense, which to me is just as bad as what's happening in the Department of Justice with this woke nonsense. I think Secretary Austin and I think Chairman of the Joint Chiefs Milley have been disgraceful in their performances. So that's another area where they better be ready. They better have big guns ready to go in there and change everything from day one, from the ground up.
But we better have a House and a Senate, because unless we have both, nothing's going to work.
Well, in addition to the two of you, I would also suggest to the next president, someone like Charles LaBella, who has demonstrated some courage in standing up to.
He's a great guy. We know Chuck very well. We've worked on cases with him. He's fabulous.
Chuck would be fabulous.
That's a great idea.
He stood up to Janet Reno when she was attorney general and made the recommendation for a special prosecutor on the China stuff that she adamantly opposed. But I hate, we've got about a minute and a half left. What if we get another Biden administration, Biden wins in 2024, and we don't have a huge Republican rally to balance the left, balance the Democrats. Is the country on its last days, do you think?
You bet. We've got to take the Senate back, and we absolutely have to increase our majority in the House. This is vital. If we cannot take the presidency, which we must, we have to take the House and the Senate. But I just have to tell you, Victoria and I had absolutely no confidence in Ronna McDaniel. That woman has been a disaster. And I'll tell you, Trump, by the way, has not been helpful in some of the Senate races, especially in Georgia, by encouraging people not to vote. That's got to stop. I mean, we lost Georgia twice because of Donald Trump.
Because his ego gets in the way.
Yeah, it is too much. He makes it too much about himself. He's not, you would think he would be smarter at this point. He would have a better idea of what he's up against, but we just haven't seen any evidence of that. I'm frequently disappointed in his inability to defend himself, to make arguments on his own behalf. Instead, it's always, well, the judge hates me, or they hate me, or whatever. And we've got to have somebody better, I think, at this point. Victoria Tensing and Joseph DeGeneva, thank you so much for joining us today on Through the Looking Glass.
Thank you very much. It was a pleasure to be with you, Scott.
Good talking to you, Scott.
Thank you. Thank you so much. And thank you all for joining us. We'll be back next week with another edition of Through the Looking Glass on TNT Radio. You can follow us on Twitter @NewsCapGroup. Please do that. And we will talk to you again next week. From Washington, D.C., this is Scott Wheeler signing off.